Chris Stavin.
Yeah, Chris is great.
Every year he, at least he used to, he when ramp season would start, he would go buy a Culver's burger and then put ramps on it.
Dude, that's the move, though,
Son of a
actually.
bitch. That
That
sounds
is the
awesome.
move. It's a super spectacular episode of the Wild Edible World podcast today. I'm one of your hosts, Michael.
And I'm Steve. Welcome back.
Welcome back. We've got a really fun guest, part of the crew of Forgers of Degenerates, that, as we like to affectionately call ourselves. finally on the show, Orion Aeon at Forage, Colorado. Thanks you so much for joining us, dude.
Yeah, thanks for having me. About 2 years in the works, I think.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, we met for the first time a couple of years ago, and you keep up with content pretty well, and I just hold my feet to the fire. And I'm sorry, Orion. I'm sorry I haven't had you on before now.
if I'm being 100% honest, when you told me a couple weeks ago, like, hey, Orion's coming on for this, I was like, holy shit, how is this the first time?
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Well, it's not completely your fault. You're like, hey, we need to set up a time to do the podcast. And I was like, for sure, let's talk. And then, you know, life happens and it gets away from me sometimes. So we're here now.
All right, great. So it's not like I haven't brought it up before. Okay, great. Because I don't remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You brought it up for sure.
Yeah, I affectionately refer to you as the not just as one of the best foragers online to learn from, and to, you have great videos, but also the person who got me into Brandon Sanderson books.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned that.
With Warbreaker.
Almost better than a forager. I love Brandon Sanderson.
Yeah, yeah.
Me too.
Yeah.
I love all sorts of... Man, this isn't a book podcast, so I'm going to stop right there. but I love that. I love that. That's something that you gifted to young Michael here.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's actually something when we got together at the Midwest Wild Harvest Festival, and a bunch of us, and we started, you know, just kind of chatting, and eventually things lead away from plants, and then we all kind of realize, like, wait a second. You like the Wheel of Time? I like the Wheel of Time.
You like the Wheel of Time? Yes, I agree. That's way too many books, and they're very drawn out.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding. I'm just talking shit.
But I don't know if it was you, Orion, that originally mentioned that, like, there seems to be some sort of correlation between the way brains understand magical systems and, like, these, like, hierarchies and family names and all this stuff. And those also tend to be the same people that memorize plants and stuff very easily.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did talk about that, like, weird, like, tangential way that minds work.
So have you been reading anything recently?
Yeah, you know, I actually just finished the Red Rising trilogy.
Oh. Wait, the trilogy? So the first three books?
The first three, yeah.
Ooh, you sweet summer child.
Yeah.
There's so much. Yep.
Well,
there's
even
so
read
much.
One.
Dude. Dude,
I've heard so much about the Red
Dude.
Rising series, but
it was
okay.
Very good. I had to take a break. I won't spoil anything, but like the last, I don't know, like 3 hours, because I was listening to it. There's like, they like rip your heart out.
Yes.
And then,
that's one series.
I was like, I need to stop for a minute. Like, I'm hurt.
That's one series that's legit had me fucking bawling like 3 or 4
wow.
separate times. Dude, the books are good. They they worm their way into your heart with these characters in a way that makes like a Game of Thrones feel silly, you know, like it's good.
Yeah. Yeah. Would also recommend.
Well, now that Orion says it, I guess. but let's get back. This is a foraging podcast. So let's talk a little bit about your experience with and your relationship with plants. Because you have, you have over 80,000 followers on Instagram. You make, as I mentioned before, you make very good
Dang.
Foraging content. You've really hit some goals that you set out for yourself, and Just kind of curious, like, we love asking everybody, like, what is the first thing you ever remember foraging?
Yeah. I was thinking about that the other day. So I'm gonna answer that question with an introduction to how I started foraging and then circle back to it. Probably on a tangent, but
let's go.
We love tangents.
We love rabbit holes and tangents. They always happen on these sorts of discussions. But I grew up in Santa Fe, New Mexico. The first kind of the instance that I sort of give to my introduction to the world of wild food and foraging is when I was around 10, a family friend took myself and my brother and my dad out mushroom hunting in New Mexico, looking for rainbow chanterelles and kimberlites and hawkswings and a few other edible species that they knew of. They were kind of new to it as well at the time. And we had a really good day. It was a good like monsoon year in New Mexico, which is down in our neck of the woods, the Southern Rockies, very, very dependent on monsoons to have good mushrooms. And I just, we had like, I mean, there were mushrooms everywhere. We were filling bags of just like perfect kimberlites. And it just sort of like hooked me that there was like, you could go out into the woods, which was a place that I like grew up. Like I grew up on a small acre. Mountain acre in New Mexico. So like a lot of my youth was spent outside. I was like, I could do this thing that I love and also get food that tastes good and like connect the dots there. And it just became this like shame that I was very hungry for. And so we did that year after year. And then that ended up pushing me or guiding me to studying natural resources in college. I was kind of torn between a path to like a technological field, computer science or engineering, or something in, you know, the environmental side or natural resources side. And at that time in my life, I wanted to be outside. So I went with natural resource management. I actually switched my major from computer science to natural resources right before I moved up to Fort Collins, Colorado. And then I just sort of like fell into the scientific side of plants and learned as much as I could and started eating plants and getting back into mushroom hunting really heavily. And a few years later, started really looking for other people who were doing the same thing that I was and interested in foraging. And that ended up with me creating Forage Colorado and teaching other people because there weren't that many people doing it. So that's the origin story, essentially. The first thing that it ate, I don't remember for sure because I must have been like before I was really forming solid memories because my dad was very good about like teaching us about things outside, like pointing out trees, taking us fishing and doing all those sorts of things. And so like, you know, growing up, I knew all the trees in our forest around our house, ponderosa, pinyon pine, and Rocky Mountain juniper. We had like a small patch of asparagus in part of our yard that I'm not sure if it was like escaped from our garden and just naturalized or if it was actually like a feral patch, but we would always eat that. We had some apple trees that had sort of gone feral around our property. So I don't remember specifically, but I was kind of thinking about that the other day, like, there's this one instance, this mushroom hunting trip, that really sort of solidified my path in wild foods. But growing up, that was like always being reinforced, like learning about nature around me, smelling the lilacs, climbing the big plum tree in our front yard, eating asparagus, going fishing and eating the fish we caught, going camping, like all of that stuff was just reinforcing this interest in wild food for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. I feel like that's a lot of how my childhood was as well. Just like being outside, finding things to put in your mouth that taste delicious, you know, like one of my first things was just like, at the time I didn't know what the hell it was. I just know it was this bright fruit on a tree. It ended up being, a plum, a wild plum. Yeah. And, just how my best friends growing up, their family had, like a little lake house. And so like catching catfish and learning how to properly care for, you know, like a catfish that you've just, and how to like process that and make it so that it tastes good. Because even to this day, catfish isn't my favorite fish, but if you cook it properly, it's delicious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting to hear. I love hearing these stories from perspectives of people that come from a very different history than me. We've told our origin stories on the show in the very first couple episodes, but I didn't have any family that knew what any of the plants outside were. My parents weren't campers. They didn't take me outside. Mm-hmm. I didn't know any trees. I only knew some things because my parents told me they were poisonous, you know?
Sure.
I feel like that is kind of like a pretty large, that's, I'm not alone in that, that it's a pretty widely experienced, you know, that's how a lot of people grew up in America. It's really awesome to hear. Yeah. That like
in suburbia or urban, you know, urban environments, urban stuff isn't accessible or just, you know, wasn't part of your parents' growth, you know, as they grew up. So they didn't offer it to you because they didn't know it.
Yeah. And that I love hearing the stories where it's not about what the first thing you experienced was because you were always around it, but what the most impactful experience was.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And talking about that, like, I specifically had a memory pop into my head of climbing this, like, we had it was some sort of cultivar, you know, like a purple plum, small little plums, but the leaves were purple and the plums were, you know, purple and about the size of a grape, maybe. Climbing that, like, all the time as a kid and eagerly awaiting it, you know, the plums to ripen and eating them way too soon. And, you know, I sort of had that memory of that tree in our front yard.
Nice. My parents planted a calorie pear in their front yard.
This is not a Bradford.
In Bradford, yeah. Yep. Yep. So, have you been foraging yet this season?
No, I haven't actually. Not that there's not stuff out, but it's really in Colorado, kind of just the very beginning of the season right now. If you're really getting after it, you can usually find some like early oyster mushrooms this time of year during the warm spells between our spring snows. What I generally target this time of year are like, you know, the early spring plants and roots. So I'll probably dig some burdock and dandelion here in the next week or so. Salsify is starting to show up, and we've got a bunch of that on our property, so I'll probably dig up some of those. I really like the greens in that one more than the roots.
Is there anything that you're like particularly looking forward to foraging this year?
Yeah, is there anything that you haven't tried that you want to try to do or make or find this year?
Yeah, you know, one of my goals this year, and it's something that been a little bit hesitant to do for a number of reasons that I'll talk about. But one of my goals this year is to find healthy enough populations to feel good about foraging some of the roots of the native perennials that we have here. We have a bunch of really awesome native perennials that get big edible roots, like biscuit root, Mariposa lily, there's a bunch of others, and some of our native, you know, smaller native onions. But
nice.
I've been hesitant to do it. One, because, you know, native perennials are long-lived, and when you dig them up, they die.
You're
removing it.
Yeah.
But if you can find a big enough patch that, you know, is densely clustered, then thinning it out is usually, you know, helpful for the plants. But the other reason I've been hesitant to do it is because, you know, I like sharing these things online as content. I think they're educational, but that one is sort of like, you know, if the wrong person gets a hold of information and doesn't like fully conceptualize what I'm trying to explain and just goes out, identifies a plant, and then like digs up an entire population, and you know, they've impacted a native population that
can't be restored,
you know. So I'm sort of hesitant sometimes to do much with native perennials, just because I do know that they can be sensitive. But on the other hand, I think it's also an opportunity for me to like really think more deeply about how to create like really educational content around how to do it properly, you know, when to dig them, what to look for in certain populations, you know, reseeding into the disturbance, putting some back and just thinning out the clusters, those sorts of things that could be considered when doing native perennials like that.
I love that. That's great.
I think that's a good idea. And I like that you like the thought of the challenge of, you know, trying to figure out how to say it the best way and still teach people, because it is like it's one of the major ethos of foraging is like getting people to care about these things through their stomach and the experience of like how delicious and amazing and beautiful they are. Yeah. And that comes with it the respect of wanting those populations to thrive and therefore, you know, ethical harvesting and all that.
Exactly. Yeah. Like, this isn't a grab and go. This is mm-hmm. be mindful about what you're doing mm-hmm. and only take what you're going to use and don't take it if you don't think that it's not going to be there next year or
yeah.
and
I
years
think,
to come.
I think we all as content creators could use a lot more work and a lot more thought into how we deliver that message too. So mm-hmm. kudos.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. Yeah. It's an interesting one. I've been thinking about it, you know, for a couple of years. One, because I'm really interested in sort of pursuing some of those native species just out of curiosity. A majority of my diet comes from, you know, plant-wise is non-natives or invasives just because there's so many of them.
Sure.
But those native species are so interesting and it just takes a little more care. You know, the 15 to 30% of, you know, what you see rule doesn't quite apply. You know, if you're taking one plant and it's only like a population of three, then you've removed, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that's yeah.
Significant.
A significant portion of that population. So it just takes a little more consideration of the entire ecosystem that you're harvesting in.
Which, yeah, I mean, it should always, that kind of, you know, foraging should always be done with a degree of intention and consideration. Mm-hmm. So that's just par for the course, mm-hmm. if you ask me.
Yeah, totally. And then that's kind of the main bucket list in my area. There are some other, like, native species I'd kind of like to find, just ones I've not found before that have been on my list. But I've kind of done a lot of the like most common or most well-known edible species here. And that's not to say that I'm exhausted the list. There's a ton that I probably don't even know about.
Sure.
That I need to start digging into. But more so on my list is to do more like traveling, get into some other states that have species that we just don't have. We talked about before we started rolling that I've never eaten a ramp before.
Right, yeah.
we have no ramps in Colorado. I don't know that I'll get an opportunity to travel somewhere during ramp season this year, but that might be a goal soon. And then I've also never eaten a black rumpet fresh. So
yeah, neither have I.
I haven't,
actually,
I haven't either. Yeah.
That's on my bucket list too.
Yeah, I've got a ton of friends that go either live on the West Coast and pick them all the time or that go there. But I know there's also like East Coast. And do you get them in the Midwest too?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. They're just really hard to find because we have such like oak dense forests and the yeah. leaf litter is just brutal here.
Yeah.
At least that's why I think I haven't found them.
Yeah, I've never. Never had the
pretty
pleasure.
Tough to spot.
They are, yeah.
Like a morel, that you know, they're more camouflaged than something like a chanterelle or a pingleweed or something that's nice and bright. Chicken of the woods.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you can see chicken of the woods a mile away.
Yeah, there's some good meme content in there. You know, yeah, like yeah. like everything else, or not everything, but a large portion is like, you know, kind of hard to spot.
Oh
a morel,
my gosh!
And then chicken of the woods is like glam mushroom.
Or
you know,
it's like that picture of the goth girl and the fairy
yeah,
girl
exactly.
sitting next
yeah.
to each other.
Perfect.
That's amazing.
All right, we're posting that next week. So do you have any like highlights from last year that you still think about, some like big finds or favorite ingredients?
Oh man, last year.
Yeah, a long time ago. I know. It really is.
I know. What year? Last year's mushroom season was really bad for us here, so I did a lot of plant foraging. There's nothing that really like stands out in my mind from last year. It was kind of a more chill season. I just sort of focused on the stuff I knew and with what time I had. I did a lot of traveling last year. Went to Ireland for like a week and a half. And
oh, nice.
That's badass.
Find anything cool there?
Yeah, it was just sort of... I foraged some blackberries, but it was mostly just like, you know, a family trip, spend time with the family sort of thing. Boo. But there was some really awesome foraging there.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
So, yeah, I was just like last year I was kind of just focusing on the usual things that I forage. But the year before that, I found a really big flush of blue chanterelles here.
Oh, yeah.
That one kind of sticks in my mind in recent years. The year before, so what are we in, 21 now? 2021, I found my first ones ever after looking for 10 years. And then, yeah, 2 years ago, I found an even bigger flock. So blue chanterelles are not a true chanterelle. They're Polyozoellus multiplex or Polyozoellus actualized or Linus.
Huh.
Multiplex was there was a single species genus until 2017, I think, and then they broke it into four. So the one we have in Colorado, I believe, is actualized or Linus, which means dark blue. But they're in the Bellaforaceae family, which are the leathery earth fans. But they just kind of look like chanterelles, so they get called blue chanterelles. But yeah, super cool, kind of a little bit black trumpet looking, but more kind of wavy folded clusters.
And actually blue, right?
Mild. Yeah, they're kind of a very, very deep blue.
What do they taste like?
Super mild flavor.
Yeah.
Yeah, not as good as, you know, like, actual chanterelles or even convolutes in terms of like a strong flavor, but a nice texture, and yeah, just like a very deep mild flavor. I know they're really when you find them, like, they're highly sought after for as a natural dye.
Oh,
which I don't do anything with, but I've heard that.
That's pretty.
Do they keep
cool.
their color after they're cooked?
Yeah, they kind of darken after you cook them, so they get very dark. Kind of black.
Very interesting.
Way cool.
Yeah. This is a super cool find.
Wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit... You're
welcome
a
to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie wow!
Sigh.
What's wrong, buddy?
Well, I just realized this mushroom supplement I bought isn't actually made with mushrooms. It's made with something called myceliated grain?
Myceliated grain?
Oh, no!
I'm sorry to tell you, buddy, but myceliated grain is a sure sign of a poor-quality mushroom supplement.
Well, dang. I wanted mushrooms, not brown rice. What should I do?
Well, you should support a small-batch producer from right here in the Midwest. Keweenaw Apothecary.
Keweenaw Apothecary? Tell me more.
Keweenaw Apothecary specializes in high-quality mushroom extracts from Michigan, and they always use real mushrooms, never, never, never myceliated grain.
That sounds like exactly what I've been looking for. Where can I order?
Well, you can find them at keweenawapothecary.etsy.com. That's K-E-W-E-E-N-A-W apothecary.etsy.com. Be sure to read their many excellent reviews.
Thanks, buddy. I don't want no low-quality mushroom products from a factory. I want Keweenaw Apothecary.
Wowie wow! So you have a degree in history in natural resource management. Is that the field you work in now?
Yeah. So I studied natural resource management and fisheries biology, and I work for the Colorado State Forest Service, specifically doing conservation seedling work at a nursery.
Oh, wow. Cool. So, like, what does your day-to-day usually look like? Like, planting seeds and stuff, or?
Yeah. So, I'm a production manager, so I grow seedlings for conservation in a field setting. So they're called bare root seedlings. And various native and naturalized species for restoration, reforestation, windbreak use, that sort of thing.
Very cool. Are any cool edible ones?
Yeah, we grow several prunus species, native plum or American plum. We grow a couple apricot species, depending on which seed type we can get. Oak cherry, Nanking cherry, which is a naturalized berry from Asia.
It's very tasty.
Nanking cherry is really good. Of all the common cherries, that one's really good. We grow a couple currants. Wax and golden currants, wild rose,
nice
sumac, three-leaf sumac, which is a small kind of shrubby native species. Do you have three-leaf sumac over your own in the Midwest too?
No, maybe in portions. I don't think so. I think we only have smooth and staghorn.
Yeah, Rus trilobata. It's like a shrubby and a low-growing sumac that just gets like small clusters instead of those like spikes.
Oh, berries. Neat!
That's they're really good. That's I think most of the edible ones. You know, we grow conifers, which are all edible.
Sure.
We grow what else? We grow some native perennials that have edible parts. Yeah, you know, a lot of them are edible, actually.
Sure. Yeah.
I would say a majority of them have some edible use, aside from maybe like the cottonwoods, but even those have some.
Oh yeah. Uses. That's fun. Sounds like a pretty fulfilling job.
Yeah, it sounds pretty badass, honestly.
Yeah.
Most of the time, it's a pretty cool job. You know, it has its challenges as every job does.
Sure.
Do you, I forgot what I was going to ask. You recently moved into a wonderful home. And you said you had some animal chores to do before we got on the call. You know, what kind of animals you got?
Yeah, what's that look like?
At ye old homestead.
Yes, a little homestead. My wife and I, our goal was always to get some property. She grew up with horses. She has owned at least two since I've known her, which is the last 12 years, and she's owned them even longer than that. And like I said earlier, I grew up on a little bit of land, so that was always kind of something I wanted to fulfill for myself in my adulthood.
Sure, that's a dream.
And when we first started looking for a house, we couldn't afford land, and so we bought out like an investment property in town, and then a five-year plan turned into a seven-year plan, and 2 years ago we finally found a place. It's east of Fort Collins. We're on 45 acres.
Damn.
And mostly grassland, but we've got, you know, some trees that were planted and some weedy edible plants around, and then for animals we have two horses, chickens and two dogs. The chickens we had a flock of 10. We lost the majority of them recently and are rebuilding, so we got 13 new chicks last weekend that were
Is that Coyote?
I was a neighbor's dog.
Ah, damn.
Yeah, just kind of an unfortunate series of events that led to their dog having a massacre over at our house. We have a good relationship with them. So,
sure, sure.
Know, just kind of like, well, that sucks. But
yeah.
But we kind of, you know, the good part of it is that we are rebuilding. We're doing some goals that we have for our chicken set up now instead of waiting. So it gave us an opportunity to sort of reassess and rebuild. So we're getting a bigger coop. We're kind of moving things around a little bit. We're going to have a fenced area for them. But sure. It later has goats or some other livestock that we get.
Nice.
So, what are the plans?
Yeah.
For like the, other livestock?
The plans for other livestock? Well, we've talked about goats. I kind of like to have animals that have some sort of practical usage, you know, so like goat's milk or
sure,
you know,
sure.
I'm not against eating goat meat either. Pigs, my wife was in 4-H growing up, and so she is familiar with like animal husbandry, doing pigs and
awesome
cattle, so we could do some of that too, but we don't have any solid plans yet.
Cool.
What's your flock down to right now after the massacre?
We have two adults, two laying hens, and then we got 13 chicks that'll be ready to go. You know.
Oh, cool! So you already got them going.
Yep. Yeah, we went out and got 10 the next day, and then three more like a few days later.
Very cool.
A mix of breeds. So.
Yeah, I have three in my backyard.
Oh, nice. What kinds do you have?
I have two Barred Rock and one Rhode Island Red.
Okay, nice. So we don't have either of those in our flock.
They're pretty cool.
A lot of different chickens.
Yeah, there's so many awesome chicken breeds out there.
Yeah, there are.
One of my favorite things to do is grab fresh eggs and then like go pick some greens or pick some wild mushrooms recently and make like a foraged and farm egg omelet.
Yes, definitely. Put me in a coffin. Like, so good. I live in a tiny little apartment, so no chickens for me.
But you do have Cornelian cherries right across the way, so that's
got
cool.
A lot of Cornelian cherries in there. Right? I still manage to forage, but
that's another one that I've never had. That's not a prunus species. Is that a prunus species or is that a dogwood?
Dogwood.
Yeah.
Those are a treat, man.
They're okay.
I like them.
They're good. There's so many different kinds of them. So it's like some of them are astringent as hell. Some of them are really sweet. Some of them are long. Some of them are short.
Yeah.
Kind of like mulberries.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
I think they're great.
They're good.
A spruce tip experience.
What'd you say? The spruce tip experience?
Yeah, like each tree is a little different.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, I do a lot of I do a spruce tip beer with a local brewery Bubble House every year, and that's definitely people are so wary when you're like, just take a little nibble of the pine tree and see if it tastes good before you pick all of the spruce tips and put them in the bag, and we end up with this like super resiny. It's like, no, we want the lemony, nicer, milder ones. And people don't believe me. They're like, it's going to taste terrible. It's like, just try it. For some reason, they believe me eventually.
You just keep pushing it. They'll get it eventually.
Yeah. So
that's something I want to get more into is wild brewing. I'd like to do like a batch of spruce tip beer at the house or, you know, some of those other.
Yeah.
Some of those things that like Pascal Baldor does.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, some of the wild wines and catching wild yeast and all that.
Yeah.
Very satisfying.
His projects are always so cool.
Yeah, he is like one of the coolest people in foraging for sure. The pottery, his books are gorgeous.
Yeah.
Speaking of books, how do you not have a book deal yet?
I haven't really pursued one, mostly because I'm busy, but like, I've had a mushroom book living in my head for a while that one of these days I'll write.
Intriguing.
I co-wrote, co-authored, or not maybe not co-authored, but I contributed to a mushroom book for the Mycological Society here in Colorado.
Oh, awesome. Cool.
Coming out later this year. So, yeah, it'll come eventually.
Maybe someday.
It's something I've always wanted to do. I need to sit down and start working on it.
But a mushroom book, huh? Not a foraging book?
It would be, yeah, a mushroom foraging book. But it would be specifically mushrooms, because that's sort of what I'm most passionate about. That's what I've been doing the longest. And I feel like it's a market that's sort of lacking in my region.
Oh, okay.
So like this mushroom book that I contributed to for the Mycological Society will be the first Southern Rocky Mountain specific foraging book, like mushroom foraging book that I know. Most of the mushroom books for this region are all like mycological, you know, very little information about edibility.
Sure. Yeah. They're just like, look at this.
Yeah. Like an identification guide. So, and I think the one that the Mycological Society published will be a useful resource, but it's sort of more like a big list with not a lot of detail. And I'm more of a fan of the Sam Thayer style of book where you pick like 20 to 30 species and get really nitty gritty with them.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, and I think, I think the success of his style of writing has shown that that's what people are hungry for too. I mean, so much of this super dry analytical content, and it's like, no, what are the author's experiences with this? What does it taste like? Yeah. Can you eat it?
Agreed.
This isn't just.
That's another reason why I'm leaning to mushrooms, because I've got 10 plus years of mushroom experience. Even just, going out once a year as a kid, that's still, these experiences that I can sort of build stories from. Whereas plants, I'm still like, I could definitely write a plant book, but it would be a lot of the same information, because there's a lot more plant books out there.
Yeah, there are a lot of mushrooms, right? There's a lot of different varieties of mushrooms, but there's a lot of different varieties of plants. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck.
Yeah.
There's so many.
I think there's probably mushrooms to a few species whole, but as far as edible ones go, I think there's probably less mushrooms. But the other thing is they're just like they're more interesting. They're a little more like intriguing, I guess. Like, I love plants, obviously, but the mushrooms are kind of what captivated me into this world. So they always have a special place in my heart.
Awesome. Sorry, had technical difficulties. So it'll be a mushroom book, and it'll be the best damn mushroom book anybody's ever written in Colorado. Eventually. Do you do any foraging classes in Colorado?
I do, yeah. I've done it a few different ways over the years, but what I've landed on that works best for my schedule, since I'm working full-time and living life and making content, is I just do kind of private classes on a very limited basis, and then I'll do events here and there. Like, I'm doing the Eagle Mushroom Festival later this year.
A small kind of
private, semi-private event for backcountry hunters and anglers this summer.
And you're usually at the Midwest Wild Harvest Festival, or you had been like last year or 2 years ago?
Last year I didn't go because I was in Ireland. This year I would like to go if I can, but I don't know what the schedule is like yet. Some small events like that. At the Midwest Wild Harvest Festival, I'm usually just a participant, although I did teach the mushroom classes 1 year. That was pretty fun.
Yeah.
Being thrown into teaching mushrooms in a region that I don't live in was like, oh gosh. Better polish up on my Midwest mushroom species.
Yeah, because they're two pretty different growing regions. I mean, we don't get any Bleats. Yeah. You do. Or not like
not like
King
a lot.
Bleats. Yeah.
We get a couple.
Yeah, you have different Bleats.
Yeah.
And harder to identify Bleats. Mm-hmm.
Do you have a favorite mushroom?
But my favorite mushroom is my favorite mushroom to eat is the hedgehog mushrooms that we get here in Colorado.
Controversial.
I do not know what species they are.
Don't people think they smell like socks or something?
Hedgehog mushrooms? I don't know. Ours don't. Ours are like peppery. They're very similar to chanterelles, but like peppery. They're super good.
That sounds
meaty and
incredible.
And a little peppery and a little fruity. But my favorite kind of mushroom species as a whole, the whole experience, the whole package would be the rainbow chanterelle, Anthurellus roseocanus. And that's because that was like the golden goose growing up. Like, you know, we'd have a great day picking king bullets, but if we found a patch of rainbow chanterelles, it was like the best day ever.
That's awesome.
And they're little, you know, it's rare that they get bigger than 4 inches across. They're very small. They do look like kind of little nuggets of gold growing on the forest floor. And they're like way more packed with flavor compared to some other chanterelles. And I've not tried all the chanterelles, but I've been told by people who have that the rainbow chanterelles are the best tasting of all of them.
Dang.
Interesting. I just pulled up some pictures of them, and they look really cool. They have like a little bit more of a whitish stem and almost like a bloom on them, mm-hmm. like white bloom.
Yeah. Their caps are like a little bit like whitish pinkish, kind mm-hmm. of a buff color. And then, yeah, like I said, it's mostly, you know, if you get a really good ear, you might pick like average, you know, like 1.5 inch or 2 inch caps, but they're pretty small. And they're real hard to figure out. What I've seem to notice is that about every 7 or 8 years we get a banner year where they're just, you know, it rains really well, the monsoons are good, and they just fruit like crazy, and you can pick, you know, 15, 20 pounds of them in
an afternoon outing. Oh man.
Other years you'll go, you know, you'll hike miles and miles and you'll find like maybe a one small patch and you get, you know, a handful out of them. And they grow in a ton of different habitats here. You know, when I'm going to look for king bullets, I'm headed to a spruce forest about 8,000 feet.
Sure.
That's just like, you know, that's where they grow. I know where to find them. I look on the edges between, you know, the mature forests and meadows. And, you know, I can go to pretty much any, you know, mountain region in Colorado or northern New Mexico or southern Wyoming and find the Rocky Mountain and king bullets, just based on that habitat pattern. But the chanterelles, I found them in aspen forests, in spruce fir forests, in ponderosa, in lodgepole.
Jeez.
So they're a little more, you know, widespreading and not quite as easy to pattern. So they're a challenge.
Very mycorrhiza friendly.
Yeah, they seem to be. And like I said, you know, you'll find small patches here and there that will keep you wanting more, and then a banner year you'll stumble across just like a field of gold, and it's pretty stunning.
Yeah, it sounds pretty fucking cool.
Nice.
Yeah. I want to try them so bad.
Rainbow
chanterelles are my favorite.
Yeah.
So yeah. Dang.
Why don't you come to Colorado? Let's see. Our last good year was year before last. It's 22, so I'm in 2030.
Yeah. All right. We'll put it in the
we'll
books.
See if we'll see if the pattern holds every 7 to 8 years.
Yeah, I believe you. I trust you.
That's what I've seen, you know, for the last 22, 24 years doing it. So.
I'm ready for mushroom season.
Me too, dude.
We got like 1 or 2 weeks before the Midwest morels start popping up in our area, I think. We got like a week of rain this week, and then soil temperatures should be around 40 degrees this week. So.
I think someone found some in Kankakee already.
Okay.
Kankakee County. So that's right below
I'm going to wait one more week because it's raining all week, but maybe next week.
We're probably... for probably 3 weeks minimum. You know, the southern part of the state, southern Colorado, I guess middle southern Colorado will start getting somewhere else earlier than where I am in northern Colorado. But I can kind of watch them on the Morrell map, like move west into Nebraska and then across Nebraska into Colorado.
Yeah, it's kind of what we've been
doing. Our spring season can be pretty tough. But it's also super interesting, morels in Colorado. I sort of I take partial credit for popularizing them because I read a couple articles like 7 or 8 years ago that have a ton of like tens of thousands of reads on their website.
Nice.
All about morels in Colorado. But yeah, we get yellow morels and black morels, and the yellow morels are like mid-April to late May, early June, and then the black morels start in the mountains, you know, around that same time, late May, early June. And during a really good year, or if we had a bad fire year the year before, you can pick black morels and burn morels all through the summer. We can have morels from April to August or September some years.
Just by chasing the burns and the altitude?
Yeah, going up in elevation.
You know,
moving into different habitats.
I wish I could remember the profile, but somebody does a burn map for like a bunch of different states. And it's like
it's probably Modern Forager.
That is it. That's it. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Those are my friends, Kristen and Trent. They're awesome.
Yeah. They seem, they're badasses. They keep on the, you know, in their maps that you can buy, the amount of data collection that has to go into that is pretty intense and very impressive. So
yeah, they've been doing it, I think, several years now. They always give me access, and it's super cool to see. They'd be cool podcast guests. I'm sure they'd be down.
That's a good idea.
That's a great
idea. I'll have to reach out to them.
Yeah, they used to live in Colorado. Now they live in northern Wisconsin, I believe, and Oregon part time.
Oh, perfect. So
they're like mushroom, you know, they just bounce between mushroom meccas.
Yeah, literally.
The Northwoods, Midwest, and Oregon, coastal Oregon.
Yeah, intense. Yeah, northern Midwest is pretty underrated. But a lot of, you know.
Yeah, you have like one of, I think, the highest diverse and fungal diversity in North America.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Yep. That goes for all the Great Lakes area, Midwest.
Northern Rockies have the second highest fungal diversity.
Ooh. There we go. Fist bump. Virtual fist bump.
Yeah, first and second for fungal diversity. Yeah, ours are just way more rain dependent.
A little bit, yeah. And ours, I mean, we've been lucky to not experience the droughts here in the Chicago area, but I know up in Minnesota they're suffering. Mm-hmm.
We're up to some we have some rain going so far this year, man.
Yeah, we're wet.
Yes.
Good. Yeah, I hope it continues. That's what ours needs. You know, like last year we had probably record amount of rainfall in the spring, and then it died like mid to late June.
Oh damn.
Which is right when our mushroom season starts, like our really good summer mushrooms. It was just like nothing.
Wispy.
Yeah, it's so much better if it's the rain is spread across, you know, this summer into August or September.
Oh, definitely. We'd much prefer a nice even spreading of rain rather than those dry patches.
The mushroom rain, that's what we need.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Well, good luck this year. I think we'll wrap this up. It's been really awesome catching up with you and getting to know a little bit more about your history and foraging and some of your favorite plants and ingredients, man. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, man. Let's do it again, you know, not in 2 years.
We'll do it like when the mushrooms show up, you know?
Perfect.
So we'll hit you up for some of those rainbows.
We'll just trade mushroom stories.
Exactly.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, we'll come together at like in August or something and share hunting stories.
Perfect.
Good luck this year, man. I hope you have a great week. Happy April Fools.
Yeah, same to you.
Oh yeah.
I mean, we should have just like completely. We should have just talked about nothing related to Forging.
We should have just went with the Brandon Sanderson.
No, I should have said. By the way, I forgot to hit record.
Oh no! Oh, that would have been great.
I don't like playing with fate like that, though.
Yeah.
But
well, next year, April 1st, we'll do the book and Farmstead podcast.
I love
yes,
it.
Yes, yeah.
And the
yeah.
cheeseburger podcast.
And the cheeseburger between two the buns. Cheeseburger.
Yeah, between two buns, yeah.
The Brandon Sanderson and Burger podcast.
Exactly.
Brandon Burger.
We get it with our third B. Brandon Sanderson, Burgers, and we can't say Battlestar Galactica. They already used that.
And
we'll
workshop it.
Yeah, well, we'll figure it out. We have till August.
Yeah, yeah, we've got fine. A couple podcasts to record yeah. before then. So
Brando, Burgers, and Birds. We'll just talk about burgers, Brandon Sanderson, and chickens.
I like it. Yes! I like it. Oh, man, this is great. I can't wait. I'm so excited.
Get ready for the spinoff podcast. We're starting a whole network of silly shows like
thank
that.
Yeah.
Well, thanks, that's guys. Been a, thank you, too, man. Have a great night.
Yeah, you too.
Orion.
I love that guy.
Dude, he's the best.
Oh, man.
We've hung out a couple times, and yeah, he's just really awesome. Definitely kind of a little soft-spoken, so knowledgeable, very modest. Just
his content's
pie.
Super fucking cool, man. If mm-hmm. if you haven't checked out Forge Colorado page and his videos, and they're very educational. He makes them nice and digestible, mm-hmm. and
very straightforward. Yeah. It's not the same food slapping on the cutting board content that you see everybody making. It's his own style. It's his own version, and it's always very informative. And like he said, he's always trying to think of better ways to transmit this information, more considerate ways to convey the whole message. Yeah, some of my favorite stuff is whenever he busts out the steam juicer.
Yeah,
he's got a whole steam juicer thing, and like he did some kind of cherry last year, and got like gallons of juice out of this thing. It just looks so good. I love the steam juicer action. Yeah.
All right.
And on that note, yeah, check out our shirts, check out our hot sauce. Our merch store is always active, always hot, spicy, delicious, keep you looking good.
Wow.
Wowie, wow. Wowie, wow. Yeah. We'll do one of these commercial ad reads. We're going to do
like a Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken. Wow. Wow.
Marsupials.
Dry hot sauce. So we'll work on that. We're working on impressions, and we'll keep reading, and you guys keep listening to our show and supporting us. Thanks so much for listening. Shout out to the people that subscribe to the show, that even though you don't have to, it really helps keep the show free. And respect, big props to you and our sponsors, people that make our music, people that show up for the show every day too, every week. They be liking the post and sharing our memes and stuff. We love you guys so much. So it's half of why this show is so fun. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Love you.
Bye.
Bye. Wowie, wow. We've got a new hot sauce for you.
It's so delicious.
It's spicy.
It's spicier for sure.
Spicier. It's called Harvest Moon, made with ghost peppers, American persimmons,
and spice bush berry.
It's going to be great. We also have t-shirts available. Brand new t-shirts.
The best t-shirts, I think.
Baseball tees.
Scrumpers United.
If you've collected apples, if you've collected fruit, you're
welcome
a
to the club.
Welcome to a club. You're a scrumper. So check out our merch store, wildedibleworldpod.myshopify.com. Wowie, wow.